it's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate, and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. Okay, we're joining your day with something from the Earth First Journal, longtime radical environmental publication. We're going to be talking about a lawsuit that the journal is implicated in recently by a group of lawyers that are representing energy transfer partners and other parts of the Dakota Access Pipeline. And basically the implications what this has for the wider radical anarchist autonomous social movements in the United States, especially with thinking about in terms of the J20 defendants and everything else that's going on. So can you just introduce yourself real quick and just kind of real bare bones, just tell us a little, sketch it out for us about the case.
Yeah, sure, totally. My name is Rabbit. I am a member of the Earth First Journal Collective. We report on the Earth First movement and other radical environmental activism. And yeah, just hoping to talk about this recent lawsuit filed against Greenpeace, BankTrack, and Earth First by the folks behind the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Okay, great. Well, we're just going to get into it. And this, of course, if you want to see a text version of this information, there's an article both on Earth First Newswire, which we highly encourage you to check out, and It's Going Down about this lawsuit. So how did this lawsuit start? You know, how did it begin? This happened a couple months ago, but just kind of take us back to the beginning.
Not much to say about that. Yeah, the complaint was filed by Kasowitz Law Firm on August 22nd of this year. And I found out about it. I don't remember if it was on that day or a little after, when we started getting calls in the journal office from media about this. And that was basically the start of it. Yeah.
And how long ago was this filed originally?
It was filed on August 22nd of this year.
Okay, and this is a lawsuit, though. You mentioned the word complaint.
Sorry, yeah, that's the name of the first part of a lawsuit, as far as I'm familiar with it. But yeah, that's when the lawsuit was filed. No one's gone to court yet, but that's what they're seeking,
right,
for sure.
And then what is the connection between the law firm suing these various organizations? You brought up Greenpeace. My understanding is there's other groups as well, and the Trump administration.
So Kasowitz, the firm behind the lawsuit, is basically Trump's personal go-to law firm. They've defended Trump a ton of times. In the Trump University fraud case, they defended him for the Russia probe. When an apprentice contestant sued Trump for sexual harassment, I mean, tons of different cases. They have been behind threatening journalists, for instance, for reporting negative news about Donald Trump. One example is when an author, Timothy O'Brien, wrote that Trump was not a billionaire. Kasowitz sought $5 billion in damages for Donald Trump. They also won the fight to keep Trump's divorce record secret. So this is these are his cronies. This is who he calls when he's pissed off. He's not involved in this lawsuit, but it's just kind of telling that it's part of the same bullshit.
Right. And are there other groups besides Earth First and Greenpeace that are in this complaint and lawsuit?
So the lawsuit is so ridiculous. It's kind of hard to explain, but yeah, it's four entities that they're trying to sue. It's two of them are Greenpeace, different wings of Greenpeace. One of them is Earth First, and then one of them is a group, I believe, out of Europe called BankTrack. The lawsuit itself is 187 pages, and it spends much of those pages talking about tons of other groups, from Sierra Club to Earth Justice, and talking to, like, making all these allegations against them, but they're not suing any of them. So most of the complaints are about groups that aren't even actually trying to be held accountable by them.
And we're going to get into a little more detail about what the lawsuit actually says and what it alleges in a second. But what is the connection between those issuing the suit and the Dakota Access Pipeline or Energy Transfer Partners? How does that all link together?
Yeah, basically, Kasowitz, the law firm, is representing two companies, Energy Transfer Partners and Energy Transfer Equity, that are obviously connected, and they're part owners of the Dakota Access Pipeline project. So they're behind the project that the Standing Rock protests were opposing.
So we understand that this firm has a history of suing environmental groups. What is the nature of the past suits, and have they been successful? And overall, what have these suits attempted to achieve?
Totally. So Kasowitz filed a similar lawsuit against Greenpeace in May of 2016. They were representing Resolute Forest Products in that case. That's a Canadian logging company. The case was basically arguing case from last year was basically arguing that Greenpeace and some other groups committed fraud by purposely misleading the public about what Resolute was doing, what their environmental record was, all that stuff, so that they could raise money and push an environmental agenda. That case was dismissed in October of this year because basically it had no ground to stand on. I mean, it was a SLAP suit, SLAP standing for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. These are lawsuits basically designed to tie up activist groups in years of litigation, cost them a ton of money paying lawyers and flying court dates, and basically just scare them away from continuing their fight. They're designed to stop people from speaking out against injustice or scare them away from doing so. It's a pretty ridiculous way to use the ridiculous legal system, but these lawsuits are unfortunately pretty common. I've been slapped before for involvement in animal rights protests. Slap suits have been used against the tar sands blockade, the No New Animal Lab campaign, and more recently there were attempts to issue slap suits against Black Lives Matter protesters.
Right. So let's actually get into what is the actual suit in question allege, and both in general and specifically, how does that relate to Earth First?
This is actually a tougher question to answer than you'd think, as this lawsuit is sprawling and disjointed and makes a ton of claims. But let me just start by saying that the lawsuit claims Earth First, Greenpeace, BankTrack, and other environmental groups cost Energy Transfer Partners and the fossil fuel industry billions of dollars in damages, which, I mean, let's be honest, would be pretty awesome if it were true. Essentially, they argue in the lawsuit that Greenpeace, Earth First, and most of the environmental movement, it seems like they're saying, are part of a secret underground conspiracy, which they've named this secret underground conspiracy group they've come up with, The Enterprise, and that all the groups working together to fight Dakota Access are part of this secret enterprise whose goals are everything from spreading illegitimate fear about climate change to outright terrorism. The allegations include things like misleading the public about the dangers of the Dakota Access Pipeline, targeting Energy Transfer Partners' business relationships in malicious ways, property destruction, cyber attacks, and even physical violence. So that's kind of the broad allegations, but it's specific claims against the Earth First movement. I guess I want to start by saying Earth First is a decades-old international movement. It has no membership, no leadership, no bank account. It's essentially a philosophy or an association, so by law it can't be sued. But still, they're claiming that Earth First gave, among other things, that they gave $500,000 to, quote, violent eco-terrorist infiltrators, who then allegedly used that money to form Red Warrior Camp. I'm sure your listeners probably know that Red Warrior Camp was one of the most public and radical groups at Standing Rock. So the suit alleges that. It also alleges that Earth First started an illegal drug ring at Standing Rock as a way to keep funding Warrior Camp's quote-unquote Red Warrior Camp's quote-unquote terrorism. And I just want to say, throughout the lawsuit, from what they've filed so far, they provide no evidence for any of this. They don't say where they got that number, $500,000, why they think there was a drug ring. It's all pretty absurd and baseless.
I mean, how can they prove that, for instance, like they said, a cyber attack or something like that? I mean, how can they prove that that is coming from any one set group? And then also certain things like you brought up unfairly connecting DAPL to climate change.
Yeah, I mean, if you read the lawsuit, to any rational person with any knowledge of how nature and the planet work, they are like, they contradict their own arguments incredibly in the lawsuit. They, like, as far as, for instance, they say these environmental activists claimed that the Dakota Access Pipeline would be a threat to waterways, but only such and such percent of pipelines leak. Well, in my opinion, if something has a percentage chance or a probability of leaking into our water, then it's a threat. Like, it's outrageous.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I mean, they're basically saying, you know, you can't connect us to this broader thing called climate change.
And they're saying, it seems to me they're saying, and all these people that have the same opinion that climate change is real and that we need to stop destroying the last bits of nature that exist, those people aren't just, they don't just happen to be coming to the same conclusion. They're part of an underground conspiracy to make money by lying. Like, it's absurd.
Right. I mean, which is potentially very dangerous. I mean, just as the FBI is saying, you know, on one hand, we don't investigate ideologies, but we're investigating people of a Antifa type ideology. I mean, if they're absolutely basically saying the same thing, as we think anybody that thinks climate change is a problem, which is probably most of the world, then we could find them in part of this gigantic conspiracy, which is crazy.
Totally. And I mean, that's nothing new. I mean, it's true for a lot of social movements. Obviously, we know that the state cares more about ideology than they let on. They don't go after right-wing extremists, but they go after left-wing, quote-unquote, extremists. In the environmental movement, the FBI famously, somebody at the FBI famously said years ago that the ALF or ELF were the number one terrorist threats, even though there were all these terrorist threats from the right wing that were actually hurting people, and the ALF and ELF weren't. So it's clear that governments and corporations work together to go after ideology all the
and
time.
And then let's just again touch on this claim that people within the Standing Rock encampment were selling drugs to fund terrorism. I mean, where does this come from, this baseless accusation?
So I have no idea. I can't even, like, I have no idea. It sounds, the whole thing reads like a Breitbart article. It seriously seems like they're like, oh, well, what else is a buzzword? Oh, drugs. People don't like drugs. Throw that in. You know, I have no idea. I wasn't at Standing Rock. I don't know.
And I mean, do they cite evidence in this suit, or are they just like pulling stuff out of their ass and then throwing it on the paper? I mean, how do they get away with some really intense accusations?
I think that's, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but it seems to me that's the nature of the process, right? Is you put any claim you want in legalese, and it has to be taken into consideration by the powers that be, who may or may not be in the pockets of the people using the legalese. So it's gotten this far, but yeah, there's no evidence that I've seen. I've read it cover to cover. There's not a single time where they say, like, for the drug thing, there's not a single time that I picked up on where it says, this is how we know this, or anything like that. As far as the $500,000, there's not a single time where they make any statement about where they got that number. And even the amount of damages they allege this supposed conspiracy enterprise inflicted on Energy Transfer Partners, they say billions at one point, and I think they say hundreds of millions at another point. It's like they don't even know.
The people that are being sued then have to prove that stuff is just totally you know, not true and it's made up.
Possibly, but honestly, we haven't gotten that far yet. Right now, like Greenpeace and BankTrack are basically filing motions to dismiss this outright as being absurd. I would recommend reading their motions if you get a chance. They're online, I believe, and they're really good, just pointing out how basically what we're saying, that this is such a baseless lawsuit that we shouldn't even have to argue why it's baseless. But they do argue and make some really good points as to why not only is it baseless, but it's literally an illegitimate lawsuit that can't, that shouldn't be taken seriously.
Right. That brings us to the next question, is what do they hope to get out of this lawsuit? I mean, why do it now? I mean, the Dakota Access Pipeline is being worked on. I mean, obviously there's still stuff going on around it, but I mean, the encampment has been cleared. Why go through this, you know, this process now?
I think some of it is what I mentioned earlier, you know, about just the nature of slap suits. They're trying to scare people away from fighting for the environment and fighting for the rights of indigenous communities to their own autonomy. They're not trying to stop Standing Rock. They're trying to stop the next Standing Rock. But on top of this, I mean, the whole lawsuit is really racist, in my opinion. It's essentially claiming that one of the most powerful, inspiring, and effective camps at Standing Rock, which was indigenous led, they're claiming it was secretly created by Earth First, which traditionally has been a mostly white movement. So if you ask me, one of their goals is to try to disempower the indigenous communities that truly led the fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. I mean, it's disgusting, but it's also a sign that they're afraid of the power they saw at Standing Rock. They're afraid of what they saw happens when indigenous communities work together to fight against oppressors. So I think they're trying to put a stop to that because they see the potential for real revolutionary actions to keep moving forward, and they want to do anything they can to protect themselves and their industry from that.
Right. Well, in general, can you talk about the history of FBI surveillance and harassment of the Earth First Journal? I know that for a time that the FBI was fucking with the mail of the Earth First Journal.
I mean, I want to go back just in general about harassment of Earth First. Like, the FBI has been harassing the Earth First movement and all the other rad social movements in this country for decades. I mean, they famously bombed two Earth Firsters, Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney, in the 90s for organizing a civil disobedience campaign to protect trees. As far as the journal, I'm sure there's been harassment since like far before my time that I know about, but a few years ago, our mail starting to look kind of suspect. We're getting envelopes that were like torn open and stuff missing, and some things were like everything was arriving late and some things weren't arriving at all. So I filed half a dozen Freedom of Information Act requests against various agencies to try to figure out what was happening, and eventually sued the FBI for information. And through this, we've received over 100 pages, I'd say, of information about FBI surveillance of Earth First activists and of the Earth First Journal. This has included information on them monitoring and photocopying the outsides of our mail in 2012 and seeking permission to tap a former Earth First Journal editor's phone, stuff like that. But we aren't sure to what extent they're still messing with our mail or monitoring us, but we always assume they're paying attention, you know?
Specifically, when we look at how Earth First is targeted in this lawsuit, the concept of thought crime really comes up. How can they sue Earth First, which is an autonomous, decentralized movement? I mean, how can you sue something that has no leader, as you said, no membership? I mean, how is that possible?
I mean, yeah, that's the question, right? I mean, first of all, I want to mention that the lawsuit never once mentions the Earth First Journal. Not one time in 187 pages do they mention the journal. They mention all these groups that have nothing to do with any of the groups being sued, and they don't mention the journal, but they mailed the lawsuit that's supposedly against Earth First to the Earth First Journal magazine's post office box, as if we, the few of us, usually two to five of us, I think it's, yeah, five of us right now, who work on the magazine, as if we can somehow represent a movement of autonomous individuals that spans multiple continents and decades. The reason they did that is because they don't know who to sue, because legally you can't sue a non-entity. You can't sue an association. You can't sue an idea. Not only that, but they're I mean, they're trying to sue Greenpeace, Earth First, and BankTrack for alleged actions carried out by dozens of completely unrelated environmental groups and individuals. It doesn't make any sense. But, I mean, yeah, it's a trend right now. I was glad you brought up J20 at the beginning of this, because that's another example of governments trying to, or companies and governments trying to criminalize the act of speaking or associating with people who share your beliefs, or even who just share your space. I mean, the J20 arrests, they're charging a whole slew of people, holding decades of prison time over their heads for crimes because they were in the same place wearing the same color, as if that means that everyone there is guilty of everything that anyone there did. I mean, it's preposterous, and it's really reaching on their part, because it seems like they're scrambling. They don't know what else to do, and they're kind of testing to see, will this work, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a very good way to look at it. But at the same time, I mean, this, you know, speaking of tests, I mean, this is a test for us as well. And this is time to really put up our walls and also to reach out to people and, you know, build up strong support.
Absolutely.
Yeah, going on to the next question, I mean, I think we kind of set this up, but what implications does the suit have for other social movements and struggles? What should people watching this be aware of and be thinking about?
I mean, the short answer is I don't think this is going to have any implications. I think it's going to get thrown out, just like their last case that was very similar. With lawsuits like this, they're trying to have a chilling effect on activism. And we've seen it's not working. Activist groups are not being chilled. I mean, if you look around the country right now, at this very second, there are permanent encampments fighting wilderness destruction, fighting energy extraction and pipeline projects all over the country. And many of these are indigenous led, just like Standing Rock, including Camp Makwa right now in Minnesota, fighting Enbridge's Line 3. Split Rock Sweetwater Camp in New Jersey, fighting the Pilgrim Pipeline. There's even other groups fighting other ETP projects. In Pennsylvania, Camp White Pine for years has been resisting the Mariner East 2 pipeline, which is an ETP project. There are folks fighting the Bayou Bridge Pipeline in Louisiana. I think the most important thing is that they are trying to scare us. So don't let these lawsuits, this harassment essentially from giant law firms and energy companies, distract us or scare us from opposing them. We just got to ignore them and do what we're doing, you know?
Right. What would you say the state of Earth First is today, speaking specifically of the journal and the work that you all are doing, but also the overall network?
Yeah, Earth First has been around since 1980. It's changed, it's grown, it's transformed many times in that period. In some ways, it's unrecognizable from those early days, but it's still driven by the principles of direct action, biocentrism, the importance of biodiversity, and not compromising with Earth destroyers when fighting for the planet. As with any social movement, it's kind of gone in waves. Some periods have had tons of people who are part of it. Some periods have had lots of drop off. The Green Scare in the late 90s and early 2000s definitely pushed some people away from radical environmental activism. But I'd say in the last 10 years, there's been a big resurgence. Right now, there are Earth First groups throughout the country and all over the world, including in Europe, South America, and Australia. And that's just what I know of. There are a lot of people who consider themselves Earth Firsters who attend Earth First events and protests and who aren't, or who don't, and who aren't part of a group named Earth First something. I mean, for example, the really inspiring Hambach forest occupation in Germany, fighting a lignite mine there that's destroying a forest. They drop Earth First banners from their blockades and they write to the Earth First Journal every time they do an action. In the U.S., Earth Firsters gather and have gathered for decades, twice a year, for the Round River Rendezvous in the summer and the Earth First Organizers Conference in the winter every year to discuss strategies, to share about their campaigns. In Europe, the Earth First Summer Gathering and the Winter Gathering called the Winter Moot have been happening for a number of years now. There's also even a new Earth First publication in the UK that just put out their first zine a little while ago. So it's pretty big, it's pretty wild, and it's pretty, I guess, diverse. I think one of the reasons that Earth First as a moniker or an idea has been relevant for such a long time is because it is this diffuse, wide-ranging movement and idea, so it can adapt and it can withstand a lot more than if it were a single organization or a group of people. I also want to add that in recent years, those in the Earth First movement have done a lot of introspection, I think, about how Earth First fits into larger social justice struggles and into fighting other forms of oppression, including looking at mistakes the movement's made in the past and continues to make. And I think Earth First has become stronger, more resilient, accessible, and relevant because of that. As for the journal itself, the journal's been going on for almost as long as the Earth First movement itself. And for a print magazine in an increasing digital age, I think we're doing pretty well. We have a website we update daily with news from the movement, a magazine with news and sabotage tips and other fun stuff that is both for Earth Firsters and also a tool to turn people on to radical environmental activism. I know I was an animal rights activist and anarchist and actually worked for Greenpeace back in the day. And then I was handed an Earth First journal, and that's what did it for me. So the magazine is really important to us. It's a place where Earth Firsters and other radicals can share their thoughts and kind of stay connected, even though there's no Earth First meetings and like people are all over the world. You can still feel like you're connected to this thing, and it's in a print form, which to us is important because you can find it sitting on a table at a collective house or find it in a radical library and get turned on to it.
Yeah, very much so. And the journal remains one of the few high quality publications that's talking about things happening in both the radical environmental movement and the anarchist movement. But with so much stuff, environmental stuff going on, are you seeing a renewed interest in Earth First? And specifically with the journal and the media work that you all are doing?
I mean, yeah, there's always been environmental stuff going on. But yeah, it does seem that the powers that be just keep adding more threats, right? I mean, more ways to extract fossil fuels, more excuses for destroying the wild. I can't really say whether in this particular moment there's a renewed interest in Earth First or a sustained interest or what the where it's swinging, but Earth First or not, environmental or not, it's just great to see people standing up to fight oppression, whether it's pipelines, deforestation, police violence, institutional racism, fascism, rape culture, whatever it is. I'm definitely feeling like I'm seeing a renewed interest in standing up for a better world and not taking this shit anymore. And that's really exciting. And I do feel like here at the journal, we're getting contacted by people who don't necessarily see themselves as environmentalists, but are just like, people are starting to see that this is all part of the same problem and we all got to work together to fight. And so that's really exciting and inspiring.
Anything else you'd like to add? How can people support your fight against this really fucked up and stupid lawsuit?
The first thing I want to add is I got to mention the Center for Constitutional Rights. They are the organization representing the journal in this. I mean, representing is kind of a weird word because the journal isn't being sued, but they're filing the paperwork telling them to stop sending us paperwork. Center for Constitutional Rights, they are awesome individuals. They're representing us for free, and not only are they helping us fight this thing, but they're making sure that we can use this bogus lawsuit as a platform to try and help the movement. And I can't thank them enough. As far as support, I don't think the journal needs support right now in this. I'd say what I'd ask if you're trying to help with this kind of situation, any of the listeners here, is just don't let these stacks of paper full of lies and dollar signs scare you away from getting involved with anything. Just do what needs to be done. Join or support people in your area who are fighting oppression, especially grassroots groups if you can. Support direct action whenever possible. Let this lawsuit and those like it strengthen your hatred for companies like Energy Transfer Partners, not your fear of them, you know? And Yeah, if you like the journal, write us a letter or an email. We'd love to hear from you. It gets kind of lonely down here in Florida. And there's just a few of us working on this thing, and we're doing way too much. So we try our best to represent the radical environmental movement and to support other social justice movements. But we need your help. We can always do better, and we would love to get your input. So please stay in touch. And thanks so much for all of you who do support us. We appreciate it.
Well, just last question. How have you done since the hurricane? I know you all were having some issues. We heard that you recently bought your office and all that stuff. I mean, what's going on with the all that stuff?
Well, the hurricane, luckily, we were fine. It moved to the West Coast. We're on the lower East Coast of Florida, and it moved to the West Coast. We got hit by like a Category 3, which is not much compared to what we were worried about. There were other communities, obviously Puerto Rico, but in Florida specifically, the Immokalee, which is mostly a migrant community, was really, really devastated by that. The few of us at the collective here, were collecting funds for in case it was a disaster situation here, but it was pretty fine. So we sent that money to Immokalee to help there. And so, yeah, we got through that okay. It just pushed us back because we were out of power for 5 days or so and fighting with cops who weren't letting us feed the homeless and people who didn't have power and stuff like that. But in general, it was fine. As far as our housing situation, we did not buy the house. We basically some awesome folks who were looking for an investment anyway and cared about the journal bought the house from the landlord who was trying to kick us out and sell it. So they bought it, they lowered our rent, and we don't have a fear of being pushed out of here right now. So those were awesome folks, and we really appreciated it. It's important to have a space where we can do the work. Awesome. You know.
Well, anything else you'd like to add? Any closing thoughts? Any shout-outs?
Shout-out to It's Going Down. Y'all are friggin' awesome. We read your stuff every single day. I love that I wake up in the morning and we repost you and you repost us and all that stuff. So keep up the awesome work. Y'all are killing it, and we really when on days when we're too tied up with like trying to fix the plumbing or working on the print magazine and we don't have time to get online and we're not doing so great, we're like, thank God It's Going Down is there. So appreciate it, y'all.
You too. I mean, the Earth First Journal remains an amazing resource. And I really want to stress to people, you know, it's the holidays. If you're looking for a great gift, get a subscription, you know, to the Earth First. I mean, prisoner updates, articles that you probably will not see online. I mean, it's really worth it. It's a great in-depth publication, and in my opinion, has really come very far. There's some really great in-depth analysis coming from a variety of perspectives that I think really needs to be read and enjoyed. And you're probably not going to see a lot of it online, so buy a subscription, get a stack. It's a great resource to hand to somebody that wants to get involved in radical movements and keep doing what you're doing.
Awesome. I really appreciate that. And just to add to that, if anybody wants to be like, we're always trying to push the propaganda. So if anybody wants to be a distributor or wants to see the journal but can't necessarily afford the price online, just like hit us up, talk to us, collective@earthfirstjournal.org. Our phone number is also in the magazine. We're just trying to get it out there. So we'll work with anybody who wants to help. So just awesome. Stay in touch.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, and keep us updated on this ongoing shit fest of fuckery that hopefully is going very quickly, just like all the other ones.
Hell yeah. Thanks so much, and stay wild.
Wasn't born in this cage. I'm aching for freedom. And these eyes filled with fire, so desperate to conspire against all oppression.